Abbey Dental, sponsors of Late Lunch, for all aspects of today's dental care. Highly recommended throughout the Isle of Man.
Hello and welcome to the Late Lunch Leftovers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading this. We're taking a look back at some of our highlights over the past week. Very fortunately, Agony Al was once again with us, solving some of your very tricky problems. We explored another unusual collection, which is cryptically called Kane's Canes. We took a look inside one John Moss's brain, and the Alzheimer's Society Isle of Man was our charity of the week. But first, one Kim Quine joined us on Tuesday and set us something of a crochet challenge. So it is Challenge Tuesday. We have our ball of wool and we have our crochet hook. Kim Quine, when did you start crocheting?
It was sometime last year, actually. About a year ago, I'd say.
And what got you into it? It's quite a meditative kind of thing to do,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, it's nice to sit in the evening and just switch off. It's quite mindful in a way because you're just kind of focused on that. And also my nan is an incredible knitter and none of the family so far have actually taken up that creativity in that kind of way. So I thought, right, while my nan's still around, she's 80 this year, I thought, right, we'll try and take the baton and keep it going. So she's been really, really pleased about that.
Surely a crochet hook would be better than a baton.
Yes.
Okay, just putting that out.
Very
there.
Good. Now, you mentioned knitting there. Knitting, of course, you can do all sorts with knitting. How far can you take crocheting then? Because obviously you can do like a square
crochet
thing.
Like extreme crocheting. Extreme crochet. Is that what you're talking about?
There's all sorts. There's some Facebook groups online and it's just incredible. There are people making huge, huge, like king-size blankets with pictures of people and things on them. You can make clothes. Basically, anything you can do knitting, you can crochet. But knitting can be reproduced by machine. There's no way that crochet can be reproduced. So if you get something that's crocheted, that is handmade.
If I take to this, I'm crocheting myself an outfit. I'll wear it next week.
Will you now?
Yes.
In a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, you better put some clothing underneath that, I think.
The Nation Station, Max Radio.
The Late Lunch Charity of the Week. Please tell us your name and charity.
My name's Graham Bell. I'm the Services Manager at the Alzheimer's Society in Douglas.
How did the charity start and what is its purpose?
The charity started, I believe, back in 1979, something like that. It's to support people with dementia, all forms of dementia, to help them to live their lives as well as possible and for as long as possible.
Tell us about your team.
My team is greatly reduced at the moment, unfortunately, because we've recently lost two people. But we've got three dementia support workers who work at various locations. One works in the community. One works with the Older Person's Mental Health Service to support people immediately post-diagnosis. And one of them works in the hospital to support people in the acute care setting. And we also have a side-by-side coordinator who works to provide volunteers to go and do activities with people.
Who is the charity for?
The charity is for anyone on the island who has dementia and needs support, and anybody that's affected by dementia. So that can be partners, wives, friends, whoever.
Which other organisations do you work with?
We work with lots of people. We'll work with literally anybody else that provides support for people with dementia, people that are carers of people with dementia. Basically, it's the health service, it's the care homes, MHKs, you know, literally anyone. Although we're part of a big organisation, we're actually a separate charity on the island, so we're a small local service for people with dementia, so we have to work with lots and lots of people, so it's a very varied job.
What are your main goals?
Our main goal is to eliminate dementia. Ultimately, that would be what we would want. That's probably a long way in the future. And in the shorter term, we aim to support people to live well with the condition.
How do you see the charity developing over the next 5 years?
We've already put things in place to enable us to help every person that has a diagnosis of dementia. There are currently 1,300 people with dementia on the island. We have provided services for around 450, just over, and our aim is to provide services, if they want them, for every single person that has dementia.
How is the charity funded?
The charity on the Isle of Man is funded differently to the UK. We are funded entirely through voluntary donations. So that can be money that's given to us from the public, from businesses to support us and other organisations. And our money is kept separate from the UK's money. So we use the money on the island to support people with dementia. In the UK, they're funded differently.
How can people support you?
Well, if they want to support us, they could give us money, obviously. They could come along and be a volunteer. There's lots of great opportunities for volunteers to come along to support people with dementia directly, doing activities with them.
Where can people find out more?
You can go to our Facebook page, which if you put in Dementia Isle of Man, something like that, you will find. Or you can phone the office on 613 181. We can give you the answers that you need.
Profile complete.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
For some reason, my family, and indeed one acquaintance in particular, describe some of my observations on occasion as weird. I like to see my interest in the unusual as something of a quality. There have been notable British eccentrics. Baron de Rothschild lived in splendour in Buckinghamshire, had a carriage drawn by zebras, and in his house he had a tame bear that slapped women guests on the backside. Queen Anne's cousin was appointed by her to be governor of New York. As he represented a woman, he decided to dress like one. A blue silk gown and satin shoes on one occasion. It's as well our governor doesn't think on similar lines. But putting that to one side, over the centuries there have been those whose behaviour would consign my own behaviour to the cupboard marked the deeply mundane. For instance, you'll have heard the phrase, "I am the Batman." The said bringer of nemesis to the naughty hung about, literally being a bat, in Gotham City. Gotham City got its name from a small village in Nottinghamshire called Gotham. Washington Irving, who wrote Sleepy Hollow and Rip Van Winkle, also created a periodical called Salmagundi, or the Whim Whams and Opinions of Lancelot Longstaff, Esquire and others, and hit upon the name Gotham for New York City.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
He named it after the Nottinghamshire village, whose inhabitants were renowned for their foolish ingenuity. They got this back in the time of Bad King John. They heard he wanted to travel through their neighbourhood. Now, whenever the king rode through your neighbourhood, you were obliged to make any road he was on into a public highway. The folk of Gotham didn't want a public highway through their village, so they started acting oddly, deliberately, when the king's messengers arrived.
Let's go, but inconspicuously, through the window.
According to reports, some were found trying to drown an eel in a pool of water. Some were building a fence around a cuckoo's nest to stop it flying away. The messengers took the message back to the king that this was a village full of fools and not a place for a hunting lodge.
Holy understatements, Batman.
When Bill Finger with Bob Kane of DC Comics created Batman, they opted for Gotham City as the name for a dark, largely malevolent New York City. Indeed, if you read the Batman Chronicles, it shows that Gotham City was originally built to house the criminally insane.
Out of this blood and fire will rise the dark night that your city needs.
Gotham is not your responsibility.
I'm making it mine.
Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York City, once wrote, "It was a pleasure to have this opportunity to acknowledge the cultural and historical links between the two places."
New York, New York, come on, oh, scared the land of ice.
The idea of appearing mad can be useful. If you're out jogging or running and a dog decides your calves would be worth a nip, I've read the best way to counteract this is to act mad. Make a loud moaning noise and twist your limbs about in some weird, there's that word again, weird voodoo dance. This will puzzle the dog at best, but also might frighten it. The one time a large Alsatian came from a driveway and ran at me, snarling fearfully when I was out jogging in Bristol, I ran at it, in terror really, shouting loudly and waving my arms. But the hound turned and fled with its tail between its legs. I sometimes think this might be a useful ploy should Nigel Farage or Janet Street Porter approach you and look as if they might want to engage you in conversation.
The Nation Station.
Well, I'm delighted that once again we are joined by Agony Al. Great to have you back with us. And really timely, actually, because we've had a couple of people in touch about some problems that they're struggling with and hoping that you can add some perspective to it.
That's a good thing.
The first one then. Hi, Agony Al. I fancy one of my work colleagues and I don't know if I should ask them out on a date. I'm in a real pickle and need your help. What would you suggest?
Okay, who's that from?
Anonymous.
See, skirting around the issue won't help, Anonymous, whoever you are.
You don't want to out yourself on radio, though, first, do you?
Is it a lady or a man? Do
I
we know?
I think it's a man.
It's a man?
It's a man.
Asking the lady out.
Yes.
Okay, well, what can I say? Women love to be impressed, so I'd recommend the big romantic gesture, the BRG, as we call it in the industry. Do something funny. Do something which will capture her attention in a unique way, which no other man, rival, will be able to match up to. I myself once ate a whole lime with the skin on to impress a lady.
And it worked?
Temporarily.
Right.
But it worked.
Okay, good advice.
Yeah.
Hope that helps. The second question, and this is a really delicate one, okay? Mm. Leanne has been in touch to say that the toilets at work are shared. There is a separate area where the sink is. The problem is, says Leanne, whenever I go, someone waits right outside until I've finished. Surely that is the height of bad manners and it's often quite off-putting. How can I politely suggest that they wait well away until I've finished doing whatever I need to do?
Right, there are several ways you can approach this. I'm a bit of an expert in this field myself, as we all are here in the Manx Radio HQ, as the toilets here are absolutely shared as well. What I would suggest is popping yourself up to B&Q and getting yourself some of those signs that you see on building sites, important work in progress. Quarry ones, blasting in progress is very good as well. Or even take to your own. Many home publishing software suites now offer the ability to create custom signs and certificates. Something effective. Or if you don't have a printer, write it on the door with a marker. Easy as you go.
You wouldn't say anything directly to the person then? You avoid that sort of embarrassment?
Oh, avoid it, yeah, but why say it verbally when you can say it with a nice printed message?
Agony Al, as ever, thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you again soon.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
I've just pulled in to a property on the Cronky Voddy. There are cars whizzing past, but I'm going to go inside this property to find somebody who collects things. Now, just inside the door here, there are a selection of walking boots, Wellingtons, clearly somebody who's quite an outdoorsy sort of person. A selection of very interesting plants, just wiping my feet like a good guest. And then by the door here, I spot a pot full of sticks, and that is what I've come to talk about today. Inside here, I find a Howard Kane. Hello, Howard Kane.
Hello, hello. How are we?
Very well, thank you. Now, I've come to speak to you about your collection, and I am going to call them from this point forward Kane's Canes or Howard's Canes, one of the two. But they're not actually canes, are they?
There are some canes, and then there's some sticks. So there's a mixture of canes and sticks. I have got some true canes and then, yeah, a good number of walking sticks as well. I don't know how many I've actually got. I've sort of collected them off and on for years. I am, as you probably mentioned there, there's collections of shoes, there's collections of plants, there's collections of CDs, there's collections of books. I mean, I think I have a slight hoarding tendency, which is never good.
And I'm sure most people would have expected us to talk about your CD collection, because I'm guessing you have an enormous amount of CDs.
Yeah. I knew the number up to 2,000, and after that I forgot. I don't know. It'll be certainly north of 2,500, but I don't know. It's getting to the stage where you think there's no room. I mean, the house here is a reasonable size for two people, and I've run out of room. We've run out of room for books and CDs.
We clearly need to get the clutter queen in here.
Yeah.
But the reason
it's
we decided...
Clutter, it's all treasures, isn't
of
it?
Of course it's all treasures. Of course it is, Howard. Well, the reason we decided to talk about the canes or the sticks is because it is an unusual thing to collect. And as you said, you're clearly very outdoorsy. So did you first start collecting them because of the practical nature? Do you use them?
I'm just trying to think. I mean, it certainly goes way back when. I seem to recall it goes back to when I was probably in my teens, early teens, mid-teens, somewhere around there. And you know how it is. I'm sure you must have had something similar where you get sort of, you may be trying to be a bit different and perhaps a little bit, I don't know, stand out from the crowd one way or another. And I wasn't really in with the in crowd particularly. So I guess I was all slightly left of field. So I had, don't remember specifically the first stick I started using, but I did then go on to start carrying sticks all the time. Everywhere I went, I would take a stick. Some I found around the house, or might have been, you know, heirlooms or from mum and dad, whatever the case may be, and then started sort of collecting them and getting a bit more interested in them.
So do you still have the very first one that you acquired?
Well, this one is pretty early. So this is just a straight, I'd just call it a straight walking stick, really, not one with the classic curled handle. This is one, again, which is very, I think that's one of the reasons I got it. It's very sort of tactile. It's just like a knot at the end of a long, straight piece of hazel, I would guess it is. Nice and simple. It's actually a really satisfying stick to use, and I still take it out hiking from time to time. If you're of a certain age, you'll remember when tobacconists used to sell walking sticks, and that you don't really see tobacconists anymore, with tobacco not being the most popular element of life for a lot of people now. Tobacconists have gone, and so have the walking sticks. But it used to be, and I think this is where it came from, there was Bell's on Victoria Street, and he used to have tobacco, pipe tobacco in jars, and he would have a rack like, or a pot like this, with walking sticks for sale. And I'm fairly sure that came from Mr. Bell.
So what sort of era are we talking? What sort of decade?
Early 80s, so yeah, probably mid to late 70s, somewhere around there.
And there's one in the middle here that has already been featured on Mike's Radio.
This one, now I know where it came from. I bought this myself. It came from the late lamented Jerby Junk. And they used to have a nice collection of sticks. And I'll show you a much nicer one in just a moment, which also came from Jerby Junk. I was looking, when I got more interested, I was looking for a sword stick. And that, I mean, I think they're illegal to carry around these days, but in Victorian times in particular, you know, gentlemen used to carry sword sticks as a weapon of defence if needed. So, and the gentleman would be carrying canes as a matter of course these days, and you would have a cane which concealed a blade so that if you were mugged or, you know, someone jumped out of the alleys in the East End of London, you could whip out your sword stick as a gentleman and defend your honour, as it were. Proper Victorian ones go for a handsome price now, you know, hundreds. This I found in Jerby Junk, thinking it might have been. So it's what, about 3 foot long?
Yeah.
It's in bamboo, I would say, the outer casing. At the top, it's got a split iron, you'd call it a collar, like a sort of double-length collar, and then a large, again, round handle at the top rather than curved. And this unscrews.
Oh.
You unscrew it. And this has featured on Mollie Dooney with, what the hell is that?
What the heck is that? Oh, and there's something inside.
Comes. So I bought this thinking it might be a sword. It's not a sword stick. It's a long metal blade in the middle. It's spiky at the end, as if it's driven into something. And I don't know if you can see it, but if you look carefully there, it is marked in inch gradations along the way, as if it's been used for measuring something.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And the end would seem to have elements as if someone's actually hammered the end of it there.
Oh, yeah.
I have absolutely no idea. I've asked lots of people, and we've had it on Mollie Dooney with, what the heck is that? And we still don't know for certain.
Those are all our late lunch leftovers for this week. Do tune in for the main helping on Manx Radio weekdays just after 2 p.m.
Every week, of course, we'll have our regular features with Duxford Diaries. We'll have Mark Tiley's Greatest Hit, Midweek Mindfulness, and plenty more with our monthly guests as well.
But for now, thank you so much for listening to the Late Lunch Leftovers podcast. We'll see you again next time.
Abbey Dental, sponsors of Late Lunch, for all aspects of today's dental care. Highly recommended throughout the Isle of Man.